Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Tuesday, January 17th. I'm Alan Shartok. Congressman John Faso is in the studio today. The Republican from New York's 19th district started his first term in Congress earlier this month. His district encompasses all or parts of 11 counties in the Capital Region, Hudson Valley, Catskills, and Central New York. If you have a question for Congressman John Faso, give us a ring. We're expecting a ton of calls on today's program. The number is 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Congressman John Faso, your calls and more coming up right after this news. We'll have a very civil, I want to underline this, civil conversation. Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. Today we welcome Congressman John Faso of New York's 19th District to the program. His district encompasses all or parts of 11 counties in the Capital Region, Hudson Valley, Catskills, and Central New York. John began his first term in Congress earlier this month. Congressman Faso was appointed to the House Budget, Agriculture, and Transportation and Infrastructure Committees. He is a former Republican leader of the New York State Assembly. Congressman Faso graduated from SUNY Brockport and Georgetown University Law Center and lives in Kinderhook, right around the corner from Chris Gibson. Congressman Faso, John, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Alan, great to be with you and your listeners.
We've been together on this before these microphones many, many times. Well, I have to say the phones are ringing like crazy, so I'm going to set up a couple of rules just so that everybody knows what my rules are. These are not yours, nor did you tell me to do anything like this. But I'm going to ask everybody to keep it short, number one. And number two, because we want to get to as many people as possible. And every phone is ringing right now. Number two, civility is the rule. Okay, so now we'll go to Peter in West Hurley. All right, Peter, you're on with Congressman Faso. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter.
Hello, Congressman Faso.
Hi.
Hi. Since you were sworn in for the first time just over 2 months ago, would you be willing to set up town hall meetings once a month up and down the district to meet your constituents that elected you?
Well, Peter, it's an idea. I was sworn in about 2 weeks ago, and one of the things that I'm doing is endeavoring to meet as many people as I can when we get back into the district. And I'm certainly going to take into consideration holding town halls. I don't know if I want to have a specific schedule for it, but I certainly am going to be available to my constituents all around the district.
And Peter, he didn't hesitate twice to come on here, which is a sort of a town hall before tens of thousands of people.
I'd just like to add that I would be willing to help his office in the interested towns in setting these up. And by looking at the congressional schedule, you will be off the fourth Friday of each month except for April, June, and July. April and July, you could do ones on the third Friday of the month. In June, it looks like you're in session all month.
Peter, thank you. Why don't you write him a note and make your offer? Appreciate that very much. Bye. Okay, so now let's go to Paul in Kingston. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Paul in Kingston. Go ahead.
Hi, Paul. Hello, Congressman Faso.
Hi, Paul.
My question is, do you think that your constituents will take kindly to your repealing the ACA without a replacement at the ready?
No, I don't think they would take kindly to repealing it without a replacement. And so one of the things that I'm absolutely bound and determined to do is to make sure that we have reforms that will fix the system, that will address the problems that exist with the ACA, but not toss people under the bus that are now covered. And a number of these reforms would include creating the ability of small businesses to once again band together to create association health plans, which were banned under the ACA. This is a very, very good thing for small businesses. And as you probably know, in our district, most of the people who work for the private sector work for small businesses. They predominate. I would also like to see more regulatory flexibility so that insurers can offer plans that really suit the needs of small business employers in particular. These are the people who have been really squeezed by premium increases that have seen. In fact, I had one lady I remember telling me she has good insurance, except that if she gets really sick or some member of her family gets really sick, the deductibles that they have to meet would basically break the bank for their family budget. At the same time, there are very laudable things that were contained within the ACA, including the ban on pre-existing conditions as being a bar from buying insurance. We've had a provision like that in New York for some time, but that's a little, there's some complications into how you do it, and I have some expertise in that area from my state-level experience, and I want to hopefully bring that to Washington. Also, the provision that allows young people to stay on their parents' plan until 26, that's all very good. So there are some good things about the ACA, but the biggest problem with the ACA is, as you remember, you may recall, we were promised that if you liked your health plan, you could keep it. PolitiFact, back in 2013, a independent news organization, declared that the lie of the year, because they said there are tens of millions of people that could not keep their existing plan because of the requirements of the ACA. The problem, I think, overall, if you had to sum it up, is that they federalized the insurance markets to such a degree that it made it very expensive for many, many millions of people. And there are 8 million people in the current environment who actually choose not to buy insurance, even though it's heavily subsidized, but they choose not to buy it, and they pay the fine. And so I think we have to make sure here in New York State that we address the Medicaid population, the vast majority of people who got coverage under the ACA in New York State, and that's, of course, what I'm most concerned about here in our district and here in our state. They got it through Medicaid. So I want to make sure that we protect those people. But the process, and this is a little bit of a misunderstanding in terms of what was the Congress has done in the last week, the process is going to take many, many months, and it's going to be done out in the open, and it's going to be done through the normal legislative process. And I hope that as we go forward, people will be able to see that and judge accordingly.
John, what about the 20 million who stand to be kicked off?
Well, again, I don't want to see those people kicked off. And we heard actually some encouraging words from the president-elect yesterday about that, or today. I'm not quite sure exactly what his proposal is. But the bottom line is that I want to see as many of those people protected to have the availability of affordable insurance, something that they can receive so that they're not kicked off and thrown under the bus.
Thank you, Paul. Okay, so now we will go, let's see here, I'm just trying to get everybody in order. We'll go to Ann in Unionville.
Unionvale in Dutchess County.
So sorry. Ann, you're on.
Thank you, Congressman. I want to thank you for stating that your vote in the secret ballot to end the Ethics Committee was against doing that.
That's right.
But I'm concerned about the first House rules session on the first day of Congress that allows congressmen now to have complete control over any records generated, created, or received in that office, kind of like to take the fifth on the papers in the congressional office. Had that been true, the very infamous Republican Congressman Aaron Schock, who tried to decorate his office like Downton Abbey, could not have been dealt with or even revealed to his constituents. And the second part of that rules bill that troubles me is that lands belonging to all of the American people, the parks and even some monuments, now can be transferred without any discussion in committee, since the rules law that went through on the first day of Congress this year says that there is no loss of value to the American people. I'm hoping that you will reconsider both these sections and might consider revoking both of those sections. Thank you, Congressman.
Okay, and thank you. Number one, you're correct. I voted against the proposed rules change on which would have, some say, gutted the Office of Congressional Ethics. I thought it was ill-advised, and I think it's also important for people to know, Speaker Paul Ryan got up in our party conference and said, don't do this. This is a bad idea for a whole lot of reasons. And the members, to show that they have some independent thought, even though I think it was the wrong thought, they voted to adopt it. And the very next day, they reversed themselves, and I was glad they did that. But I was on the right side of that issue. The one you mentioned about the records, I think you're actually incorrect, because all of the spending that a member of Congress does is a matter of public record. the spending that we get, and every member of Congress gets the same allocation regardless of their party and regardless of their seniority. You get the same exact allocation to run your office, to pay your staff, to pay for your travel, to lease your equipment, to lease your district office, et cetera, et cetera. And what former Congressman Schock did was indeed shocking, but the spending for his office budget would always have been public. It would not have been private under this change. My understanding is that the matters, the papers that would have been private would be your own correspondence with constituents, for instance.
So, I was just reading from the bill, sir. It says, any records created, generated, or received by the congressional office of that Congress member will be the sole property of that Congress member.
Yeah,
that's from the bill.
Those budget records for our internal budgets of to run our office are not covered under that definition. So you have no worry in that regard about that. And if I'm wrong, I would stand to be corrected. But I'm absolutely certain that I'm correct in this regard. So I really appreciate, Ann, your call.
Ann, thank you. Okay, we'll go now to, we'll take a break, and then we'll be right back. The phones are really loaded, as you might imagine, and we just hope that we can get everybody in, so keep them short, folks.
Support for WAMC comes from Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork, vivafreshpasta.com. Schenectady Symphony Orchestra announcing Fresh Voices, featuring Beethoven's Symphony No. 8 this Sunday, 3 p.m. at Proctor's Theater, schenectadysymphony.org for information. Bodywork professionals, licensed massage therapists, Latham and Saratoga. Handmade 2017 letterpress gift certificate available in shop or online. Your massage and bodywork experts, bodyworkprofessionals.com. The Discovery Center, presenting January programs featuring winter discovery hikes and exploration into the world of bats, owls, and fishers, albanypinebush.org. And Schenectady County Historical Society, presenting Together Until the End, Schenectady in the First World War. Exhibition, film series, and speakers, opening reception this Saturday, 2 p.m., schenectadyhistorical.org.
And we are back, and we are delighted. We're here with John Fasso. I've known John for a long time. And we'll go to Martha in New Paltz. Okay, Martha in New Paltz, you're on.
Hello. I am very worried about our precious public lands being turned over to some western states, more drilling and mining on our public lands, and most of all, the weakening of the Endangered Species Act and the wolves and grizzlies being removed from the Endangered Species Act. Will you act to prevent any of this from occurring?
Well, Martha, thank you for your question. Unfortunately, I have to tell you that I am just not up to speed on some of the specifics that you have referenced in your question. But let me do this. Let me research it and take a look at it. And I encourage you to contact my office either by email or letter, and I'll be happy to, or a phone call, and I'll be happy to respond with specificity. I will say that a number of the representatives of the Western states have repeatedly asserted in the first few weeks I've been in Congress that they are resentful as to the degree to which the federal government owns the land in their states. I think there's one state in particular, I can't remember which, where the federal government actually owns about 90% of the acreage of a particular state. And so there's a real dichotomy, I think, between those of us perhaps in the East and those in the West on this issue. But let me more intelligently respond by doing some research. And if you get in touch with me, I'll remember Martha from New Paltz.
And John, could you give us that email address for those people who may not know it?
The email address is, you could just send it to fasso@house.gov.
fasso@house.gov. Great. Okay, Martha, thank you very much for that. Cool. Okay, now we'll go to Margie in Olive Bridge. All right, Margie in Olive Bridge, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, Margie.
Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you, Congressman, for giving us this opportunity to speak to you. Very, very much appreciate it.
Sure.
Paul actually addressed my question, which was on the Affordable Care Act, so I'm not going to rehash that. Instead, I will ask you about another issue that I'm really very concerned about, and it's also a healthcare issue, and that is namely the defunding of Planned Parenthood. I'd like to hear your position on that and what you plan to do to hopefully protect and preserve this very important resource for some of our most vulnerable members of our society.
Well, thank you for the question. Two things I'd like to say. Number one, the Hyde Amendment is the law of the land, and I think it's important for people to understand that the Hyde Amendment precludes, bars the use of federal dollars to pay for abortion. So Planned Parenthood is not paid by federal taxpayers for conducting or performing the procedure of abortion. They do, however, perform many other health-related services. They do it in a highly regulated way by the State Department of Health, et cetera. And so long as an organization is duly licensed and providing services, I would not be seeking to remove their funding.
That's a huge relief. I'm very happy to hear you say that. So you will protect that resource for us.
Well, that is my belief, and that's what I stated during the campaign. And keep in mind that I do not support the use of tax dollars to pay for abortion. And my belief is consistent with the current federal law. New York state law, by the way, is opposite that. And I know that many people disagree with me on that point. But at the same time, I don't think the power of the government should be used to go after an organization that some may not like politically, just as it wasn't appropriate for the IRS and Lois Lerner in the Obama administration to go after the conservative groups for special review and sanction under the IRS code when they were applying for 501c3 status. I don't believe the power of government should be used to go after in an abusive way any organization which is otherwise following the law.
Margie, thank you very much. Okay, let's go to Claire in Fly Creek. All right, Claire, you're on. Go
Fly
ahead.
Creek. I love the cider mill in Fly Creek.
It's right down the road.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much for taking my call. I have a question. Have you looked into the plans in other countries that have a much lower cost of health care and a greater life expectancy? And we could really look to them for some ways to correct our health care. What do you feel? And do you know about them?
Well, I think you might be referring to countries such as some of the Scandinavian countries in that regard. And
all countries. There are many, many other countries all over the world that have lower costs and greater life expectancy.
Yeah. And I think there are different reasons for the issue of life expectancy that occurs. But the bottom line here is that we do have a history in the United States of a combination of public support and private insurance. And I think that is likely to continue to be the situation going forward. And I would like to make sure that we just have as many cost-effective options for people, while at the same time preserving some of the things that are really good about our system, which is very advanced surgical and medical procedures, which some other countries that have a more socialized approach do not have. But I think, you know, there's a lot of discussion that could be had in this regard. Clearly, our system needs improvement, and I'm going to work hard to try to do it, and I'm open to ideas and thoughts of folks who bring those along.
Thank you, Claire. Okay, now, and by the way, just so everybody knows, we're trying to play fair here, is I've been going based on our new super-duper machine here on who has been hanging on the longest. And now it's Margaret in New Paltz. Margaret New Paltz, have you been on already this time?
Hello.
Margaret, have you been on this time on the show today?
No.
Oh, okay, great. There's more than one Margaret New Paltz. Go ahead.
Hi, Margaret. Oh,
yeah,
hi, Margaret.
Martha's and Margie's and Congressman.
Hi, Margaret.
What do you plan to try to do in the Congress to help protect us all from climate change?
Well, one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to follow the lead of my predecessor, Chris Gibson. I'm going to co-sponsor the resolution that a number of Republicans in the House have sponsored about that issue. I'm also going to be supportive of efforts to increase our research and development for renewables. And in particular, I think one of the things we need is longer life batteries, because that's one of the key ingredients. Solar can be very effective, but unless you, and wind can be very effective, but unless you have batteries that can harness that power and use it when you need it, it's very important that we not fall into the trap of Germany, which a few years ago, under the pressure of the Green Movement, shut down all their nuclear facilities. And what they wound up doing is emitting more CO2 than before, because they had to turn to coal to replace the power that was lost from nuclear. And the reason they had to do that is because the intermittent electrical supply from the renewables wasn't sufficient to power their economy at the times when they needed it. So I think we have to have an all of the above strategy, but I think we also have to work at making sure that we harden our infrastructure against floods and other weather events, and just pursue a strategy which tries to employ all of our technological know-how to bring about more efficiency. You know, we can also achieve significant reductions in electrical generation use through efficiency measures. And I think those are things that we need to pursue as well.
Would you tell me what is in the bill that you say Congressman Gibson was involved with?
That's a resolution that acknowledges that climate change is a result of man-made activity.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, so now we'll go to Chris in Stamford. Okay, Chris in Stamford, you're on now.
Hi. Thank you, Congressman.
Hi, Chris. Nice to have a call from Delaware County.
Well, thank you. Actually, we're on the Schoharie County side of Stamford.
Okay.
We're close. My question is in regard to health care. Many Americans have yet to experience a serious health care issue like, say, joint replacement, cancer treatment, or heart disease. But those of us who have realize that people with high deductible plans can go bankrupt after hospitalization, or as well as paying, say, the 20% that a lot of plans cover 80% and then you pay 20% is a very it's a financial difficulty for many people. What is your plan to help control the true cost of health care? Because I have my medical bills standing in front of me right now, and I can give you a particular line item example of the $72,742 for the hospital room, which was accepted and approved and paid $15,000.73, which indicates that much less compensation is acceptable to medical institutions.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, this is a side point to your question, but one of the things that I find perplexing is the kind of smoke and mirrors that you get when you see those bills. And it's very difficult for consumers to ascertain actually what was behind those bills and how were the costs calculated, et cetera. And then when you do get behind them, you find sometimes they're charging rather large fees for things that should be much less expensive. But the larger point you're raising is, how do you deal with people that have extraordinary medical expenses? And here's one of the things that I think we have to have. We have to have a stop loss or reinsurance type system whereby the normal medical bills that you receive, that you incur on a due course, the kind of the normal things, childbirth, your kid breaks a leg, you got the flu, you go to the doctor, those kind of things, the normal kind of things that you want insurance to cover, and even some things that are more serious than that, up to a certain level. Beyond a particular level, and I'm not sure where that level is, whether it's 25,000, whether it's below that or above that, but beyond that level, we need to have a reinsurance system that the federal government subsidizes, and it could be done on a state-by-state basis, and it's probably more logically that it be done on a state-by-state basis, but that would cover the extraordinary medical expenses that people incur, so that the regular insurance you would purchase would be covering your routine medical bills for you and your family, and you can have a variety of different means. You can use it with HSAs, you can use it where you have a higher deductible or a lower deductible, but the things that truly would inflict a financial ruin upon a family or bankruptcy, those should be covered through a stop-loss medical reinsurance system, which the federal government should subsidize. And I've been in, I can tell you, I was in a meeting with Speaker Ryan and about 10 other members of Congress, and we were speaking specifically about this. And that's something that I know the Speaker is very intent on making sure we do, because it's precisely those things that could bankrupt a family, that make it impossible for them to survive financially, most people are worried about. Most people aren't worried about the routine doctor visit or the medical bill that you incur, or even when you might have to have a surgery or something. You're not really as worried about that. You're worried about the thing that is going to truly put your family behind the eight ball in financial distress. And for that, we need a stop-loss reinsurance system, and that's something that we're working on.
And, John, while we're on the subject—
I need to just interject that I find something ludicrous about an industry that continually bills in excess of what they are willing to accept for any service. And this is across the board in terms of any medical service we have had over the past 20 years. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, no, you're
and thank
you're,
you for listening.
You're absolutely correct. And this gets to the point that I was making earlier. There is no one, you know, you go to the store, you go to a car dealer, you see what the price is. And maybe you can negotiate with your car dealer, depending on your trade-in or depending on whether you how much cash you're putting down, et cetera. But the bottom line is you know what the price is when you look at the sticker. You go to the store, you buy a piece of, you buy a washer machine for your house, you know what the price is. We have price sensitivity all throughout the marketplace, but in the healthcare field, it is basically smoke and mirrors in terms of trying to figure out what the price really is. And that's something that we should address.
Including when you go to an emergency room. The price is frightful for what happens when you go there and you see that. Thank you very much. Okay, we are going to go now. We've been holding on for 18 minutes and 34 seconds to Jennifer in Chatham. Jennifer, you're on.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Congressman Fasso and Dr. Shartok. I guess I just want to talk a little bit about the elephant in the room, which is I'm a woman in your district, and I'm actually scared by Donald Trump taking office. And I know that I'm not the only one of your constituents that are fearful, especially as women or people of color, Muslims, LGBTQ persons. And I just want to know, will you stand up to him if you feel your constituents' rights and safety are in jeopardy?
Certainly. I will call him as I see him. And I hope that you don't have such trepidation about me being elected as your member of Congress. And I will definitely be someone who will not be shy about stating where I agree and where I disagree. Because that's really important for people to understand that. I understand that. Look, there's still a lot of feelings that are raw from the election. There are feelings that would have been raw had Hillary Clinton been elected. Excuse me, on the other side. So,
yep.
I just think that one of the things we have to do in our country is recognize. Look, we're going to have political disagreements, but at the end of the day, we're all Americans. We all live under the same Constitution. We all believe basically the same things, enunciated by our founders: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And there's something else, even older than that: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that's how I plan to operate my incumbency in this office.
That's reassuring to hear, actually, because I think we're all really looking to you and our other locally elected officials to be our conduit, our voice in Washington, and it seems like sometimes there's a huge, it's further away, sort of, ideologically in some ways than it has been for a long time. It seems like an unsettled time, so it's good to hear that you're really grounded and on our side. So
Thank you very much. Thank you. We're going to take a short break, seconds, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the land that protects the lake, offering more than 32 miles of trails for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration. HikeLakeGeorge.org. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts. AmherstCopy.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenAndPerrin.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames, where eyewear is an art, VisionExcelEyeCare.com. And Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery.
And we are back with Congressman John Faso. John, we have somebody who's been hanging on for 29 minutes and 24 seconds, Kathy in Liberty. All right, Kathy and Liberty, thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks, Alan. Nice to have someone from Sullivan County call in.
Yes, beautiful Sullivan County. So here's what I'm thinking. The Republicans who want to repeal the Affordable Care Act have yet to acknowledge that if you have health care distribution based on the health insurance industry, you must have everyone in the system, especially the young and healthy. And if you are not willing to mandate this, then you are really rejecting the pooled risk that is the basis of really all insurance. So my question is, why maintain a for-profit system that costs the consumer something like 34% in administrative costs? It costs the providers a huge amount to run their offices and the paperwork, and the same with hospitals. Why not have a single payer system into which everyone pays and pays less, everyone is covered, employers are freed from the burden of providing insurance, and employees are free to change jobs if they wish without losing their insurance. You know, Medicare works really great, I think. I mean, I'm on Medicare. I'm 74 years old, and I've gone to other countries where there's national insurance, single-payer insurance, and I've been treated in other countries. I don't understand. I mean, I think this is one of the reasons why health insurance, why our health care costs are so expensive in this country. I mean, there's many reasons, but that's one. So why not consider that?
Okay, John?
Well, a couple of things. And you have bundled a lot. I applaud you. You've bundled a lot in a very short, succinctly phrased question. A couple of things. The pooled risk. One of the things that they did in the ACA is they said that they adopted a policy that said the older person, meaning 40 to 55 or so, could not pay more than 3 times the insurance premium of a younger person. Most actuaries believe that that ratio was too low, that it should have been a 1 to 5. And it is perhaps borne out by the fact that many, many young people have been priced out of the market. And so, you know, part of the whole question of how you price insurance has to do with what's the risk. We know there's less risk for someone who's 22 years old than there might be for someone that's 55. And obviously those over 65 are covered by Medicare, so they're not in this consideration. So the part of it was the way they structured the ACA. Part of it was the way in which they determined the so-called community rating in terms of how you could price the pools. And that's why many of those pools are collapsing, because they simply don't allow enough young people to buy in at a lower rate, which they can afford, and they've discounted the rate of other people in a way that perhaps many actuaries believe was unwise. Now, secondly, you mentioned administrative costs of 34%. It actually is much less than that, and it's called a medical loss ratio, and I know I hate to mention this kind of stuff because the eyes glaze over, but medical loss ratio says that you can't spend more than 15% on administration and overhead and profit if you're a for-profit insurer. But that also includes administration, the business where a health plan might have a nurse call you up and say, Mrs. Smith, we noticed that you've been prescribed certain drugs, and how about if you look at joining a risk reduction plan for us with us to either have new physical therapy or whatever. So the medical loss ratio is statutorily limited to about 15. It's an 85-15 kind of thing. So it's the administrative costs are nowhere near what you have said. Third, I know that people will argue.
Does that include CEO salaries? And
yes, it does.
The for-profit part of it.
Yes,
because
it does.
Because 33-34% is the percentage I've always read in various places. But anyway,
I respectfully would suggest that your number is wrong. Look up what's called medical loss ratio, and that basically says the insurer has to put at least 85% of the premium dollar towards benefits. And
is that under the ACA?
Yes, and it was also I believe my recollection is that was law under state regulated plans here in New York State. The other piece of this is the argument, and I've routinely heard this argument about Medicare and Medicare's administrative costs. Medicare has a lower administrative cost, but they also have a much higher fraud and inappropriate pay rate than commercial and nonprofit insurers. And so it's a bit of an apples and orange comparison, but we shouldn't just rush in and willingly just glibly grab onto that notion that Medicare is more efficient. It actually, in many respects, isn't more efficient. And lastly, I know a number of countries, and there was a caller earlier who raised the question about single payer and the effect of life expectancy in other countries. Look at places like England. There are enormous political issues about rationing of healthcare with their national health system, and the ability of people physicians to be paid properly, et cetera, et cetera. So I would suggest that there's no one system that it's a panacea here that we've seen across the world. And every one of these systems has pluses and minuses, but it is undoubtedly true that one of the pluses of our system is that we have more medical innovation, we have more ability of people to access advanced medical procedures, and we also have really very low waiting lists for people that need knee replacements, hip replacements, heart surgeries, etc., because of the system we have here. So it has pluses and it has minuses, I acknowledge, as do the socialized systems around the world. But what we're dealing with in the United States for the time being is the system we have, and I'm hopeful that we can improve it. But I really thank you for your thoughtful and great question from Liberty.
Thank you, Kathy. Okay, let's go to, for an incredible amount of time, have been holding on, Leslie from Cooperstown, who's been holding on for 34 minutes and 26 seconds. Okay, Leslie, you're finally on. Go ahead.
Hi, Leslie. Thank you so much. Hi, how are you, Congressman Faso?
Great.
Thanks so much. It was worth the 34 minutes wait. So I'm going to ask another question about the ACA, and I also want to make a correction for you. In your email to me response, you said that the ACA was passed with no Republican input, but in fact, there were at least 43 Republican amendments to it. So although no Republicans voted for it, there was certainly input. So I just want to make that correction so that you don't continue to spread any misinformation, which I'm sure you didn't intend to do. So my two questions around the ACA. One is, my understanding is that New York State gets something like $600 million that goes towards critical health services in our state and helps to keep our property taxes low. So since you are on the team to retool the ACA, what's going to happen with that $600 million? And if it disappears, what are you going to do to help keep our property taxes from going up in the district? And number two, there's over 100,000 of us, myself included, in the district that get our health insurance because of the ACA. And what are you going to do to ensure that that 100,000 doesn't get kicked off as this piece of legislation is being dismantled?
Well, a couple of things. Leslie, thanks for your call from Cooperstown, beautiful town you live in, right next to Fly Creek, where our other caller was from. But
indeed.
Yes. So two things in terms of the extra money that the state gets. That's one of the issues that we are contemplating. And I know that New York members are particularly attuned to. So I'm trying to gather more information to figure out how we can, in a reform effort, make sure that New York is held harmless in that regard. I will say that this notion about property taxes, one of the things that I campaigned on and one of the things I'm intent on doing is eliminating the ability of the state to impose this Medicaid burden on the county property taxpayers. Fully 91% of the county property tax levy in your county, Otsego County, goes to pay for mandated Medicaid costs. And this was
How would you pay for it?
Well, this was Nelson Rockefeller's worst mistake as governor, was imposing a county share on what should have been just the state's share of Medicaid. So let me throw.
So how does that get paid for?
Well, it gets paid for by having the state take ownership of this, and you gradually require the state to absorb that cost. And there,
with what money?
Well, with money that the state is otherwise collecting. And so this becomes a question of taxes and spending. The state, for instance, right now has many hundreds of millions of dollars of programs that some would say would be less priority than health care. So I think that's a question of state budgeting. But the imposition of Medicaid costs on the county property taxpayer has been a disaster for upstate New York because it goes to the heart of what drives people away from our region, which is high property taxes. You know, people that live over in Massachusetts have much lower property taxes.
Indeed.
Compared.
And we call it Taxachusetts anyway.
That's right. But it's the tax burden is much lower over there, and their schools are just as good or better, and they have good public services, et cetera. So finally forcing Albany to do the right thing on Medicaid is something that I'm bound and determined to accomplish.
Hey Leslie, I'm so sorry. We're running out of time. Every single phone is up, so I want to try to get as many people in as possible. I hope you understand. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Yeah. Didn't answer on the $600 million, but okay. Thanks.
Oh, the $600 million, basically, that's what I was saying. We're going to try to make sure we address those issues so New York isn't disadvantaged in whatever reforms are ultimately adopted.
Dan in Kingston, you're on. If you could keep it short, I'd really appreciate it. Go ahead. Dan?
Yes.
You're on. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay. Mr. Fasso, yes or no question. Will you condemn Trump's appointment of Mr.'s Bannon and Flynn as his advisors in the White House?
Dan, the appointments of a president are his discretion, and it's just like President Obama had people that I may not have agreed with. This new president was able to appoint people that I may agree with or don't agree with, but that's his determination.
Well, but what about you sitting in front of the television and saying, I wouldn't have done that if I were him?
I would say that I don't answer hypotheticals like that aren't going to happen.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much, Dan. Appreciate it. All right. Now we're going to go to Barbara in Stone Ridge. All right, Barbara in Stone Ridge, you're on. Go ahead.
Under the wire.
Hi,
yes.
Barbara.
Hi. I sent you a letter, Congressman, back in November, December, asking for your support of the Disability Integration Act, and I was very appreciative to receive a personal card from you. It was before your inauguration, so you had not decided yet, and I'm just wondering if you have time to consider whether you will support the bill.
I still have to look at it in all candor, Barbara, because I've gotten so many letters and communications, but I do have yours on my agenda to answer, and I hope that someone from my office is actually, in fact, I know someone from my office is listening, and we'll get back to you.
And Barbara, if you could very quickly help me out, not John, but help me out and tell me what the Disability Integration Act is.
It's a bill to ensure that the rights of people with disabilities and the elderly can live in freedom like every other American and have in-community services as a first option to being institutionalized. So that states and insurance companies would offer community-based services and support, you know, pay for them so that they would not have to go into long-term nursing care.
Yeah, Barbara, it definitely makes sense, and that's why I responded to you with my personal note before I was sworn in, but I still have to take a look at the bill.
Thank you, Barbara. Yes. Okay, and let's see here. Who's been holding on the longest? Okay, I believe that makes Ann in Ulster County. Ann in Ulster County, your turn.
Yes, hello, Representative Basso and Mr. Shartok. I have a question regarding your beginning of the process to repeal the Affordable Care Act, particularly the dreaded part with the pre-existing condition.
Yep.
I am a cancer survivor, and with the reinstatement of pre-existing conditions, I will become uninsurable. And Mr. Ryan's high-risk pools will not only be unaffordable, but a terrible idea economically. Will you commit today, yes or no, to voting against anything that will reinstate pre-existing conditions?
Yes. I mean, our intention and my intention is to make sure that that provision from the ACA survives whatever reform we come up with. And I would note that that was a provision in New York state law, which previously I had supported years ago. And the way they did it was they said that an insurer had to sell someone with a pre-existing condition a policy. They would be immediately covered for all of their medical conditions other than the pre-existing condition. And that after a period of either 6 or 9 months, the coverage would then come in for the pre-existing condition. That was New York state law. And the reason you had that delay is because otherwise people would not buy insurance until they had some very serious medical issue.
Sure.
So I would envision that some type of formulation like that is going to be definitely survive whatever effort is made on reform.
And thank you very much. Okay, so now, boy, the lines have been really loaded. And we'll go to, Susan in Chatham, who's been holding on for an incredible 29 minutes. Susan, you're on. Susan?
Hi, yes, sorry, I had muted myself. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Susan.
I had a very related question, and the previous caller actually asked some of my questions about pre-existing conditions. I have a cousin, a young cousin, who was starting a business, didn't have a lot of money, and unexpectedly at a very young age had colon cancer. But for the foreign pre-existing conditions, she probably wouldn't be alive today. So she's very thankful for the Affordable Care Act. I know that the current plan of Representative Price is that there be an 18-month period. You just said that you thought that there might have to be some sort of waiting period. I think that especially for young people, they don't have a sense of the fact that when they have to make decisions about, do I get my small business off the ground or do I get insurance? They're not thinking that they could unexpectedly be diagnosed.
Yes. Susan, I'm going to have to cut you off because we're almost out of time. John, you want to take an answer?
This gets what I was talking to before about the community rating and the ratio. 3-to-1 in the law now, should it be 5-to-1? That will lower the cost for younger people and make it much more affordable for them to purchase insurance. But I definitely think that, you know, we will make sure that the pre-existing condition provision, which was a good one in the ACA, continues.
Okay. Well,
wouldn't what you're talking about, though, raise rates for older people then?
It's called community rating, and the way in which the banding takes place. It's now 3-to-1, where the older person pays no more than 3 times what the younger one does. Most actuaries say that proper banding should be a 5-to-1 ratio, and that reduces the cost for the younger person, making it much more viable for them to buy insurance. But it's someone has to pay, and the ultimate issue with insurance is how do you create a pool which is actuarially sound, which can pay the benefits.
Okay, Susan, I guess that's got to be it. We apologize to Koki and Bridget and Robin and Martin and Teresa and Sam and a whole bunch of people who sent an email yesterday, today. John, I sure hope you'll come back and visit with us. We can hear you on the Congressional Corner, and we hope that you'll do this again.
I'd like to, Alan. Hopefully we can do one when we assess the progress that we're making.
Yeah, that's great. All right, we're out of time. Thank you, John. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Dan Flory, presenting Albany Shindig this Friday, 7 p.m. at First Congregational Church, Albany, a concert and hoedown dance with live fiddle music by John Kirk and Trish Miller. DanceFlory.org, Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategy, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careers in transition, LLC.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agsteward.com .org. I'm so sorry, agsteward.org. And Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953. Now accepting appointments for patients with flexible health spending accounts. SheehyOpticians.com. That's SHEEHY Opticians.com. Thanks for joining us, everybody, on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Our calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. John, thanks. Come back often, will you please?